So big financial story. $2 billion in losses from trading. A bank holding people's money for safekeeping, isn't that the idea? To invest prudently and deliver a modest return, quietly trades away $2 billion in cash on bad bets in the volatile derivatives market. And now there are a lot of loud voices wondering how, after everything that has happened in the financial markets, how could J.P. Morgan Chase and its super genius, respected CEO Jamie Dimon have been so stupid?
Just because we're stupid doesn't mean everybody else was. I have no idea what other people are doing.
That's Dimon speaking yesterday. People did have an idea of what J.P. Morgan was doing in the derivatives market weeks ago, using a risky strategy and a special account to make hedge trades. But the company was telling people there was no problem as recently as April 13th. Here's Dimon speaking once again on a conference call yesterday. The tune changed.
The new strategy was flawed, complex, poorly reviewed, poorly executed, and poorly monitored. The portfolio has proven to be riskier, more volatile, and less effective as an economic hedge than we thought. We have more work to do, but it's obvious at this point that there are many errors, sloppiness, and bad judgment.
Explanation there from Jamie Dimon on a conference call at J.P. Morgan Chase. Joining us this morning is Michael De La Merced, reporter for The Deal Book with our partner, The New York Times. Michael, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, John.
What happened here? Can you take us through it step by step?
Sure. So the loss occurred in what J.P. Morgan calls its chief investment office, which the firm has used as basically its own way to hedge risks elsewhere in the bank. So if it thinks that interest rates are going to rise, the CIO, as it's called, will make trades to try to offset that risk. So what happened here is that the CIO basically thought that under Dimon, the CIO had actually grown bigger and more unwieldy than people had expected. But, you know, people thought that it was doing fine. So in this case, a London-based trader was taking up big positions in what are known as credit default swaps.
Right.
And so basically he had amassed a big enough position. He was betting that corporations' credit would actually continue to improve, and that didn't end up being the case, and the market moved against him.
What was the curious and entertaining name for this trader in London?
For about a month or so, people have been calling this trader, whose real name is Bruno Ixel, but most people know him within the financial world as the London Whale because of the giant position he was taking.
Looks more like Moby Dick this morning, and Jamie Dimon is, Captain Ahab here?
That's probably fair to say.
All right. Well, we don't want to put you into literary ground here. Let's get back on the financial realm here. This seems to be a direct, I mean, it's not a rule, so you can't call it a violation, but the Volcker rule is supposed to prevent banks and make it, against the law or against regulations for banks to use, account money, the money that it has on its books to just trade with. Basically, that's exactly what happened here. Does it violate the Volcker rule if it actually was in effect?
Well, that's a matter of some contention. What J.P. Morgan is arguing is that it wasn't trying to make a speculative bet here. It was just trying to hedge some risks. But the issue is that this bet was so big that some people can't see it as anything but speculative. And so there's been a lot of call for the Volcker rule to encompass this sort of activity and to become much tougher. And banks, as you can imagine, have fought against that tooth and nail. But on yesterday's call, Dimon said he doesn't know if it qualifies as falling under the Volcker rule.
Well, here's the spin directly from Jamie Dimon on that issue.
This trading may not violate the Volcker rule, but it violates the Dimon principle.
The Dimon principle, which will probably be internally dealt with at J.P. Morgan Chase. Has this story transformed the enthusiasm for, say, lawmakers on Capitol Hill, financial regulators, to take another look at this rule? Is it actually handing a weapon to precisely the critics that Jamie Dimon has constantly said there don't need to be any more regulations?
It almost assuredly has. J.P. Morgan has been one of the most vocal opponents of the Volcker rule and a lot of the proposed financial regulations. So for them to suffer a $2 billion trading loss is a pretty potent cudgel for lawmakers to use. And what they're also likely to argue is that if J.P. Morgan, which is considered to be one of the best-run banks in the country, if they could screw up, then surely there's going to be something else going on at a smaller bank or a bank that doesn't have as tight management.
Michael De La Merced is a reporter for The Deal Book with our partner, The New York Times. So assess for me, and again, I don't want you to do any speculation here, but in terms of the way some of these bankers think, which hurts more, the cash loss of $2 billion, and it might actually end up being $3 billion when all is said and done, is it the cash loss that hurts the most or the prospect of a fundamentally different regulatory environment?
At this point, the way that bankers think, it's going to be the regulatory environment. J.P. Morgan is pretty well capitalized, and so this loss in and of itself won't mean much. But considering that they're already facing tighter regulations, which has forced them to try to raise revenue from other things, like increasing fees on checking accounts to other things within the corporate bank, the prospect of tighter regulation is really going to clamp down on profits that they already see as weakening.
But what you're saying there is that the bank is easily able to basically cover this loss by taking it out of consumers in the form of fees?
Within the aggregate, you've already seen a lot of banks try to raise revenue a lot of different ways, especially if they have consumer deposits. They have been trying to come up with new fees.
Right. Well, finally, then, before we go, how does the bank and do financiers in this realm respond to the fact that it was just a few months ago that MF Global actually went under for precisely this kind of a bet? Of course, they were betting on the Eurozone. Isn't there a lessons learned argument here?
It's pretty tough, and it's actually a pretty big wake-up call. I think a lot of people have realized that there are a lot more risks in what they're doing than they had originally thought. And just when we thought we had emerged from the shadow of the financial crisis, something like this pretty much brings back memories of 2008.
And remind us, the derivatives market is basically unregulated at this point, and that may change, but up till now, we haven't seen any real impetus.
That's right. There have been calls to regulate markets like the credit default swap market, and so far there haven't been many new rules put in place, but this may give people a lot more ammunition.
May. We'll see how long the story lasts in the headlines anyway. Michael De La Merced, reporter for The Deal Book with our partner, The New York Times, reporting on the announced and apologetic announcement from J.P. Dimon and J.P. Morgan Chase that they lost $2 billion, possibly even more, in a risky trade in the derivatives market. Michael, thanks.
Thanks, John.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.